From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgate. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we're on the phone for the fans of Blue Blue Show. This is the Big Blue Roundtable episode with the linebackers and the wideouts. We're going to talk with the stakeholders. BleedBlueShow.com is our website. Audio archive episodes can be found on iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify for the millennials. You know what? It's crazy. Now, this has nothing to do with football. I'm just looking at this out of the blue because I'm under a rock. I don't watch no news, no media, none of that stuff. It's been 10 years since the decision with LeBron James. I guess it has because that was in 2010. So I guess it's been a 10-year anniversary since the decision from going from Cleveland to Miami. I just saw that across the screen. Today we're going to talk about the linebackers and we're going to talk the wideouts. We got definitely several questions for the linebackers, and I'll get to those when we start the roundtable as far as are we better off this year with this crop of guys? There's been a couple of tweaks here and there. Are we better with this group? Are we not better with this group? We're going to get to the wideouts a little bit later on this episode. Upcoming week for the show, man, we got the baseball because we're going to have a lot of baseball talk on Monday. I look forward to that dialogue with the guys and gals on that episode. We got the hockey is coming to talk as well. As far as the hub cities, they're getting into phase three, and we'll talk about that on Tuesday. And, of course, the hoops and the back and forth with the NBA. But also in between all the podcasts that we do for all the sports, our teams, all the sports, video episodes are coming too as well. We're going to talk all football, all basketball, all hockey as well on the video episodes on the Bleed Blue Show page outside of the podcast. So be on the lookout for that. We're going to do this in about a little bit over an hour. Last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about the offensive lines, defensive lines with the stakeholders. I thought that was a fantastic dialogue with the stakeholders on that episode with the Big Blue fans. We're going to continue the dialogue today with linebackers and the wideouts. As long as things are in session, we're going to discuss this thing as if the games are going to still occur. And that's still a story for another day with if we're going to have fans in the stands, if there's even actually going to be games. But that's outside of our realm. We're going to talk about what we know. Let's get right into it, man. Brian, Big Blue Huddle, man, GiantsFans.net. It was a great topics over the last month over there. Brian, what's going on? Say hello. Say a quick hello to everybody. We're going to lead off with you. Then we'll get to everybody throughout the roundtable. Brian, how you doing, man?
Hi, Steve. How we doing tonight? Hi, everybody else. I don't know who's in the queue right now, but hello to y'all, and hope we have a great show.
All right. Shout out to Brian, man. Thank you very much. I think this is Carl, man. Big Blue Chicago, BigBlueChicago.com, man. What's going on, Carl? How's everything?
Good evening, Steve. And normally I ask how everybody's doing, but based on the last couple of weeks here, just hope everybody's surviving.
Yes, sir. Good evening, man. How you doing? Definition of lit, Big Blue Arizona. Definition. Go ahead. You were saying something? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
All right. Lit, what's up, man? How you doing, sir?
Hey, man, you know, it's the dead of summer, 108 degrees right now, but it's just kind of sombering right now. It's kind of a sombering moment, but we have the show right now. I've been waiting 2 weeks, getting excited to be with my friends. That's all that matters.
Salutes, man, salutes. Ninth wonder of the tailgate world, that's the definition of lit. And the Worm. Worm, what's up, man? The Worm, the fan page, the Worm, man. The G-Spot, what's up, bro?
Nothing, just chilling. Just got back from the beach. Had a couple of drinks.
Hey, get open here, man. Everything's closed.
Hey, Worm, when we get to your turn, please, we were supposed to do the show with about the Giants tickets at MetLife or the season ticket holders. When we get to your turn, please expound on that. I don't want to forget that part because that's for the fans as well. So.
Okay.
Cool.
You got it.
All right. Let's lead off with Brian from the Big Blue Huddle, GiantsFans.net. If you're not speaking, just mute your line real quick. But let me say it like this. Starting with the linebackers, because I looked into this a little bit in depth, I'd say over the last week, because no one knew we had the episode coming. So I look at it like this. Okay, we lose Ogletree, or Ogletree is gone. We add Blake Martinez, all right? So then you look at the situation, draft, you know, even before draft night, the free agency signings. We go with Kyler Fackrell. He's the linebacker on the Green Bay Packers. When they drafted him, there was a lot of controversy. See, this is another thing. I talk with fans of other teams, like, you know, fans that I could trust. You know, kind of like if somebody was to talk to the Giants, they'll talk to Brian, or they talk to Carl Litt or Worm. You know, like, guys who know their team. So I got a guy on the Packers side of things that is a little – I'm close with. I'm cool with. And this is the guy since the inception of the Bleed Blue Show. So we go back years. So he kind of gave me the inside of Kyler Fackrell of, you know, why he didn't get on the field. And it's things I already assumed. But this kind of goes into fruition. So my question to Brian, when we get to it, you know, what did the Giants see in him? Because I digged it up, and I looked at his last couple of years. As far as getting on the field, looking at all the snaps, he had 692 snaps last year. And as far as rushing for the passer and 235. Oh, this is actually 2018. He had 235 snaps in coverage. 692 in 2018, but it tremendously dropped. And this is where it bothers me, and this, I really want to get everybody's opinion. It went from a lot of snaps in 2018. He had 10.5 sacks or so in 2018. But 2019, how did he not get on the field? Well, a lot of it had to do with the free agent signings they had. Remember the Smith brothers, all right? If you look at the Smith brothers, one Lazarius Smith that came over from the Ravens. Then you have Preston Smith from the Redskins. Those guys filled in the outside linebacker spot on that team last year, and they had a very productive year. So Fackrell never really had the opportunity to get – I guess he lost the job, basically, the free agent signings. So there was something about the Packers that they did not like. And my buddy, the Packers fan, – kind of gave me that kind of inside information because he's more closer to his team than I am. So in 2019, as far as played 422 snaps, that's not a lot. And when you really look at the games that he got in, I mean, the most productivity that he did get in was the game in week 8. They played at Kansas City. He played 50% of the snaps, which is still not high. And that's not including the last game of the year, because you know those games fluctuate depending if you locked up home field such and such. Because, you know, last game of the year, you're already playing for playoff home field. You may rest players, so you might get the bench guys to play or whatever. So you look at his career resume in 2018. He had a couple of games. The Buffalo Bill game comes to mind. He had a game versus what was the other team? I think it was the if I'm not mistaken, the Seahawks on the Seattle Seahawks on the home opener. He had 3 sacks in each of those games, so he stockpiled 6 of his 10 sacks in 2 games. I say all this to say is if Marcus Golden is not back, because we all know about the tender, and that's coming up in what? Today's July 2nd. 20 more days. So you got 20 more days to other teams in the league to match that tender the Giants put out there. If not Golden's coming back to the Giants, then I would feel a little bit better. And we know what kind of year Golden has. So if you want, we're going to sprinkle in some Marcus Golden conversation. But my question to you, Brian, from the Big Blue Huddle, Kyler Fackrell, we could talk about Blake Martinez as well, Lorenzo Carter. I didn't even get into that. We'll get into that as well as far as his development. Your thoughts on where we are at linebackers, edges, linebackers. Brian from the Big Blue Huddle, then we'll go to Carl, we'll go to Litt, we'll go to Worm.
All right, Steve. Well, I'll put it to you this way, and you brought up Kyler Fackrell, so we'll start with him. During the off season, I write up a board and I write down who we have, who's probably going, who's not coming, and I make a list of free agents that I think that the team should target. Not big name free agents, but you know, productive players you can go out, you know, sign a multi-year deal is going to help the team. And I had 3 on defense, and that was Clinton Ha-Ha Dix, Nick Fiakowski, and Kyler Fackrell. And Clinton Ha-Ha Dix, of course, he signed with the Cowboys, and Fiakowski right away signed with
the Raiders, so he was never in the mix. And we got Kyler Fackrell, and I was very happy with signing as far as he goes, because with Fackrell, you're right, his stats went, he had 10 and a half sacks 2 years ago, his stats went down. But Green Bay went out and signed Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, are two fantastic players. So it wasn't that he dropped off skill-wise, it's that just somebody who was better than him. You know, kind of like if you're the cleanup hitter on a team that, you know, doesn't hit very well, and then all of a sudden you get a couple of power hitters and you drop down to seventh in the lineup, that doesn't mean the United States used to be. Just that there's somebody who's better. And I like Fackrell a lot, amongst other things. He's a true linebacker. He's not just an edge guy. And, in fact, last year, because I did some scouting. Remember, we played the Packers. And I did some scouting on the Packers and looked into it. And a fair amount of his snaps actually got occurred when he was moved inside. And he was used as an inside linebacker. So he gives, you know, he does drop back into coverage from time to time. His primary thing had been as a pass rusher. And I think that he's probably at least as good as Marcus Golden. The thing with Golden, and I'm going to stay with him for just a second, is he got 10 sacks last year, but he didn't have any forced fumbles. And his sacks were kind of insignificant. You know, there's nothing that really stands out there. There's no Reggie White, you know, Lawrence Taylor kind of thing going on there. You know, they were more or less, you know, hustle type sacks. And I think with outside linebackers, that being edge guys who rush the passer, I think defensive coordinators are becoming more and more alert to the fact that you don't have to go out and get a really, really impactful guy there. And there's other guys you can get that can give you statistics, can give you a pass rush and be productive without, you know, tying up a lot of money on the position. You know, kind of like the term I like to use, they're becoming the running backs of the defense. And so I think, you know, Golden thought he was going to get a big contract and he didn't, so he's still out there. So if we're going to just stay with the outside, you know, so we got Fackrell, we got Lorenzo Carter, two-year guy, showed some, you know, he's shown some ability over, you know, the first 2 years, and Noshane Jimenez, you know, shown some flashes also. But I do think, you know, they, you know, drafted a couple kids, Cam Brown and Carter Coughlin. You know, they're young. You know, they're both fourth rounders. Both of them are kind of long and lanky. So I'm not, you know, you'll have to see what happens with them. I wouldn't expect a big impact from either one of them right away. But that's a huge question for me. Remember last week I talked quite a bit about, you know, I like the interior of the line. My problem is with, you know, the outside linebackers, but also inside linebackers. You know, Blake Martinez, I think, is a huge upgrade over Alec Ogletree, who I liked to sign him when they signed him. But, you know, he didn't play well with the Giants for whatever reason. Martinez is a, you know, a smart kid and can run the defense, I think, better than Alec could. You know, Ryan Conley, yeah, he looked really good, but he only played 4 games. And he's coming off a devastating knee injury. You know, so we'll see what happens. I hope he can return to the form that he showed. And, you know, David Mayo, well, David Mayo was on the team last year, so you know what you're going to get with him, which is, you know, you know, very good, you know, takes great angles, good tackler, showed some pass rush, but as far as coverage goes, skills goes, he's not very good. You know, he hasn't showed that anyways. And then we just got the two young kids, Brunson and Crowder. So I think linebacker is an issue on the defense.
All right. Brian, you got a question for Carl?
Did Carl handle linebackers?
We'll get to Carl's thoughts on the line. He hasn't get to it yet.
That money is Carl, what's he think of the outside linebacker situation? What's his take on it?
Sure. Big Blue Chicago.
You know,
you're up next.
Well, the thing I'm looking at, and I think it's something that we've all sort of talked about over a long period of time, has been the lack of speed and range. And what I mean by that is the ability to chase down running backs out of the backfield on plays in which swing passes are made to running backs, where all of a sudden gain, you know, 3-yard gains that, or maybe even less than that in terms of if you catch and tackle, should become those games. But instead, what we've seen a lot of times over the last number of years is that those games have become 7, 8, 9, and 10-yard games instead, mainly due to either just a lack of tackling, a lack of speed, a lack of coverage skills, and the like. And I'm not 100% sure that we've gotten that corrected. The best I guess we can say is hopefully that the gap has been lessened from being bad to just being average at it. How much that makes a difference is to be determined. But the one thing, as we looked at the guys that we were just talking about, that was just mentioned in terms of the two players from Green Bay, the one thing I keep wondering to myself is I said, okay, these guys were so good, the Packers found better players to replace them. Think about that for a second. And when I think of it in those terms, you know, like, for instance, if they were good enough, they would have been able to find their way onto the field for a significant time in some form or fashion. But there were better players on the roster that they were brought, that the Packers brought in to replace those guys, thus lessening their ability. Otherwise, there would have been a chance for them to make an impact, but that wasn't totally the case. In the case of Packers, he had the 10 sacks, and I keep thinking of like Marcus Golden a couple years ago. The Giants signed him on the basis of him having that one, you know, that big year. He had a nice year last year, obviously, but nothing, as just mentioned, that, you know, you looked at a game and said, you know, boy, Marcus Golden really dominated this game. Like that didn't seem to stand out to me. There was, I think, the one play against New England where he took the ball for took a fumble for a touchdown. But outside of that, there wasn't much in terms of just consistent week to week impact. And as we look at this season coming up, I think what we have to try to figure out is two things that we haven't been able to figure out yet. One, can the coverage and the tackling from that particular position improve? Because whether it's covering tight ends, or as we were just talking about, covering the east and west part of the field, as opposed to north and south, the east and west part of the field, I'm looking at it in a vertical sense. Can that be covered better than it has been? Hopefully it can be, but I don't think that the players that are there necessarily are good enough relative to what we've had before, and that was bad. I don't think that we've made up as much ground as we would hope that we've done before in the past.
Can you continue on real quick, Carl, before we go to Lit, about Lowell Carter? Because Brian kind of mentioned it. And he's into year three, and he's at the weak side linebacker spot. And this is the, you know, east to west point you're making. How is it going to be different under Patrick Graham with Lowell Carter in year three than it was James Betcher? And also as far as playing with Blake Martinez this year, like I know it's hard to predict because we haven't seen game film. Where do you project it with Lowell Carter in particular, and then we'll go to Lit and then go to Worm?
So I'm trying to figure out with Carter what his specific strength is, and I don't know the answer. And you know, it's not as if when I put him out there, I say, okay, what are the three things he does well? Does he cover does he cover on defense well? Does he rush the passer well? Does he beat his man one-on-one well? It doesn't seem, maybe I'm missing it. Maybe someone else can sort of fill in for me on this, but it doesn't seem as if he has any one defined characteristic that is strong. And I think that hurts him because if that's not in play, if there isn't one discernible strength, then I can't then say, okay, well, what does he do well? I can't take a trait that he does well and then say, okay, just do this. It's been 2 years now. I don't necessarily see the one particular elite strength, elite characteristic that he has and try to maximize that. I don't see it. Right. Can someone, I'll throw it open to everybody else. Does someone see in any of his attributes an elite trait that he has that you can just say, hey, I want to just utilize this and maximize that to the fullest? Can someone, you know, I'll open it up. Can someone
actually
define it for me? Because I can't.
Right. I'll say this real quick, and I'll go back to Brian, then we'll get Lit and then Worm. You're absolutely correct. He doesn't do anything don't know, he doesn't do anything particular on an elite status. However, if I had to pick one where he could be more of a strength, it would definitely be getting into the backfield. Not necessarily sacks, because he's never been a sack guy in college, but he is a big disruptor. He was a big disruptor in college. I don't know if Betcher was using him right when it comes to as far as trying to get after the quarterback more. You know, it's kind of a rhythm thing, but that was kind of why they had Marcus Golden. Hey, Brian, what's your thoughts on Lo Carter before we go to Lit?
I think Ashley better suited as a strong linebacker in a 4-3. So, but he's a linebacker. He's not an edge rusher per se. So I think Carl's onto something there that, you know, it's hard to put a finger on what it is that he does well. I think he contains well on a running play. I think he's got a big motor, and I think he's just a kid too. Second year player. There wasn't a lot of talent on the defense, so maybe with a little bit more talent. And I think especially Blake Martinez is light years better than Alec Ogletree at running a defense. That the production could go up, but yeah, I think the bulk's out on him.
All right, Lit. Let's go to definition of Lit, man. Lit, your thoughts on the linebackers as a core individual, guys you like to target, and of course, Carl had the question on Lo Carter. Where is Lo Carter's strengths, weaknesses? How would you like to see Lo Carter? If you can answer Carl's question, then we'll go to Worm.
So as far as Lorenzo Carter, I think the one thing that he does well, and this is just my opinion, he's able to read where the run play is. I did happen to notice in his first year that when there were run plays, he was always there before, the gaps were shot. So I think one of his good attributes is reading which direction the run is going to go and be on that particular side, whether it's on the left side, the right side, or straight up the middle. That to me, I think would be the only great attribute, his knowledge and his feel of where the play is going to go on the run. So as far as the linebackers, this is really interesting. And I think I hope everyone agrees with me on this. No one's mentioned this yet. Who is the face of our linebacker crew? We have rookies. We have an injured player that played 4 games. We have Martinez, who was signed to a 3-year deal that basically he could be gone after 2 years. And we have Flacrell, who is on a 1-year deal. So before I even go more into the linebackers, guys, help me out. Who is the face of our linebacker crew? Where is the identity? Who is the leader?
All right, let's go back to Brian. Who is the face of the linebacker crew? And we'll go to Carl after that and then get the worm.
Well, I think because you got so many new players coming in, that's kind of hard to tell. I would assume it's going to be Blake Martinez. He ran the defense at Green Bay, and he came in to the Giants. They're on the defense there. So I'm going to assume that it's him. But, like I said, you got a lot of different faces coming in. I would assume it's probably more the inside backer because you're going to have a lot more rotation on the outside. So you're not going to get as many snaps on the field. Whereas Blake Martinez played almost 99% of the snaps for Green Bay last year, and I expect him to do it this year too. So I think it's his defense to run.
Right. Carl, your thoughts, and then we'll go back to Lynn.
The face of the defense, wow. I'm going to answer that there isn't one. And it's not meant in that fashion. It's just that when you just look at the overall talent, there's not, because there isn't a particular player that his performance, how should I word this? because player X's performance doesn't stand out among the entire defense. Like you can't be a leader if you don't play well. That's how I feel. I think if you have to be a guy that has to have some measurable level of performance each week to be justified as having taken the mantle of either being a face or being a leader of the defense. I don't think you can be a leader on a defense and not be any level of performer at all. And I think what we have here is because of the fact that we've had a lacking of performance in that particular group, and actually in other phases of the group as well, that we have not been able to emerge with character, not necessarily characters, but players on the defense that can sort of police the rest of the defense, lead them as one, and then proceed to then go in the battle. I haven't. It's been something that's been really missing on this team for a lot of years now.
All right, cool. Lit, anything else you would like to add on the linebackers, man? We haven't even talked about Shane Ximenez yet or Ryan Connolly, where Brian kind of touched on. Anything you want to add on to that or any other guys?
I actually, you know what, I just kind of wanted to conclude, but first, I mean, Brian and Carl made some really, really good points to my question. But the last thing I just kind of wanted to say, and I'll turn over to Worm, is if we all hopefully can agree that David Gettleman felt like this was the year that once and for all he has to fix the offensive line. Obviously, he went offensive line heavy this past year with Lemieux, Perth, and the first round pick. If Gettleman is still around and this offensive our linebacker crew just is subpar, because Carl has said that it's okay, it's subpar. Do you think he might just say, if Gettleman is here next year, okay, I'm done with it. I'm now going to fix the linebacker crew if he's still around, because that's probably going to be his next investment of getting the future with our draft picks, is to go linebacker heavy, where he's going to get, you know, first round, second round, or third round talent to really solidify long term for the linebacker core.
Okay, that's a cool question, man. Let's go to Worm on that. The Worm, man, you heard the lit definition of lit. What's your thoughts, sir? By the way, lit. I mean, I'm lit. Worm, if you can remember, if you want to imply or implement the season ticket situation with the Big Blue fans as well.
Yeah, I can hit that real quick.
Okay.
Basically, I guess last week the Giants sent out an email to all the season ticket holders, more or less to the fact that, you know, due to the pandemic thing, you had two options. You can either pay for your tickets this year as normal, or you had the option of opting out of your season tickets this year, and you won't be penalized. Your PSL will still be active and in your name. The only difference is you won't be eligible for playoff tickets if the Giants happen to make the playoffs. Every season ticket holder that I've spoken to opted out of their tickets this year. Every one of us. With the lower level in the 100 section, I believe it's the first 6 to 8 rows. They're going to have tarps over the seats. You won't be allowed to sit in those seats. I know they canceled the Hall of Fame game and the induction ceremonies, and they're chopping preseason down to 2 games, you know, one home, one away. I kind of think the writing at this point is on the wall. But as far as the season, you know, they're one player away from, you know, getting sick or testing positive from them canceling out the whole season. New York State yesterday, they came out, they don't want any fans in the stands. So the Buffalo Bills this year, they won't have fans in attendance. Governor Cuomo came out with that. I believe it was yesterday. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how the other governors in the area are going to play this hand and play out the season, because New York and New Jersey, Connecticut and PA, they've more been, you know, working hand in hand together. So, you know, it's a lot of us just ditched the tickets this year because we don't feel confident that we're going to be in the stand at all. As far as the linebacking core goes, let me ask you this. Is there anybody in that linebacking corps that stands out at you and makes you go, oh, shit, we got a game plan for this guy? Or, oh, shit, we need to account for where this guy is on the field. There isn't. They don't have that. You know, they don't have that person that's going to take control of that defense. You know, they don't have that Antonio Pierce. They don't have a Michael Strahan out there. They don't have a Justin Tuck. They don't have an Antrell Roll. They don't have that voice that's going to be out there, you know, that's going to, you know, get the defense straight, get them moving, get them amped up, get them fired up. They don't have it. They don't have that voice. They haven't had it in years. And if they don't find it quickly, you're going to see the defense the way it's been the last several years. Pathetic. They have a lot of soul searching to do. Coaching wise, you know, I guess it's better. It can't get any worse than what we've had in the past. But you know, I'm concerned with not just the linebacking core, but with the defense in general. There's not that impact player that you can say is going to strike a fear into the opposing offense. I don't see it. I don't see it at all. When you have team, you know, players leaving teams in free agency, and if they're not, you know, if they're not a big name player leaving money wise, you know, seeking that bigger contract, why would a team want a player go? You know, without, you know, some type of a counter offer. That's what, you know, is a little concerning is Green Bay let these linebackers go way too easy. Just like Bill Belichick let Nate Solder go way too easy. Never made a counter offer. So, you know, did we hit with the two players from Green Bay? I don't know. You know, if they were that good, they would have. Green Bay would have put up some type of a fight to keep them. You know, that's where I'm at for now.
What's your thoughts on Lil Carter, Worm, as far as his progression? Kind of like what Carl hinted at as far as where do you see Lil Carter as far as his game and going with Patrick Graham as far as where is he going to make an impact? Is he more downhill? Is he more side to side? Is he more vertical as far as coverage? How do you view Lil Carter? What about, you know, you mentioned the linebackers from the Green Bay that came up. You want to touch that a little bit more as far as Fackrell and Blake Martinez, who played damn near every game, every snap. But also the back end as far as the depth. How do you feel about the depth overall? Even if we may not have a game plan for a guy, or an opposing team may not have a game plan for an opposing linebacker. How do you feel about the overall depth of what we have right now?
You know, depth-wise in the linebacker position, it's a lot of question marks. You know, they drafted some late-round players in the draft. You know, they picked up some free agents, but they don't have a proven player in that linebacking core that I can see whatsoever. You know, Carter, I was a big advocate when he was coming out of college. He's been a very disappointing. He's not what I saw when I was watching him in college. I'm just disappointed. I guess, you know, he's okay about, you know, playing a run, but not really thrilled with his coverage skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the Giants got burnt a lot on Q routes, swing passes, screens. The linebackers were just out of position constantly. Now is that, you know, is it the player's fault for not studying? Is it the coach's fault for not correctly, you know, giving the information to the players that they understand it? Is it talent? Is it a combination of all three? You don't really know. You have to see how he's, you know, going to react and, you know, react with this short time that it could happen with the coaches before, you know, they get in the game situations. But, I mean, Carter, if he wasn't to be there tomorrow,
right, you
probably wouldn't notice he was cut or waived.
All right. One more last question, Warren. We're going to transition to the wide receivers, and we still have some linebackers. So let me ask you this, Warren, and we'll go back to Brian. O'Shane Zimenez, you know, when we drafted him, he came out of ODU. I didn't have no idea who he was. I don't think nobody did for the most part. I know a couple of Giant fans on social media did, and I'll give him credit if I saw the receipts. But if you're just looking at his production from last year, I mean, there was only one game where he played a lot of the snaps, and that was the game Lil Carter was out versus the Vikings. That was the home game in the rain. And O'Shane Zimenez played a lot in that game, but we were getting killed, like you said, in swing passes. Kirk Cousins hitting Dalvin Cook with swing passes and just could have covered those areas against Thielen, if I'm not mistaken, was that around the time where Thielen called out Kirk Cousins in the media, and then he actually had a big game, a lot of those sideline wide receiver out catches in the linebacker area. So my whole question is, say, you know, Shane Ximenez. What progression can we get out of him, or do you think we're going to get out of him in year number two? That you saw, you know, you see, he played pretty much half the snaps in 2019.
I honestly, I'm not sure. He looked all right. You know, when he was in. Technique-wise, he looked okay. I just guess, you know, I think more or less he's got to transition more towards, you know, the NFL speed. Because, you know, coming from college in the NFL, the game speed's a lot different. It's a lot quicker paced. So I just think he just needs to transition better. You know, work on his, you know, just skill work a little bit. He's got to polish himself up. Spend some more time in the film room as much as you can. Just go through the learning aspects. I think he'll be a, you know, decent, you know, maybe coming off the bench as a depth player. Right now, starting wise, I don't see it. I would say more, you know, from the special teams. Let him get some reps, you know, in the game as a sub, but I don't see him as an every down player.
All right. Cool, man. Thank you very much. Well, Worm, we're going to go to the wide receivers. We're going to go back to Brian from the Big Blue Huddle. Brian, we're looking at our wide receiver core, man. And, man, this is a work. I mean, we're talking about the linebackers was thin. I mean, the wide receivers that we currently have. Tate is in another year. Remember, we lost him for the first four games last year. Shepard with his concussion protocol situation. He's pretty much one more concussion from being done, maybe two. And then I think the emergence of Darius Slayton, I know that's Worm's boy when we drafted him out of Auburn. He had a fantastic year, but it's looking real thin. Now, I don't. This is not to take into account of tight ends. We're just talking pure wide receivers on this team. We added Cordy Core from the Bengals, who didn't really have a lot of time. I'm not confident in this group of wide receivers because this was an area maybe under the Reese era transitioning to Gettleman. This was what was called the strength of the team at one point when Beckham Jr. was there. And, you know, you had your Shepherds and Cruz to compliment, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But now this thing is looking very, very thin and with no air, you know, no room for error as far as injuries. And then I look at the division, and, you know, I don't even think the cornerbacks within our division are all that great. So we might have some sort of a fighting chance. I look at the Eagles. They're going through changes with that. Malcolm Jenkins is on the Saints now, and they're moving Jalen Mills to safety. They added Darius Slay, which is an excellent trade from the Lions. I don't like the. I don't even think the Redskins secondary is that strong at all. So we might, you know, have a fighter's chance if we were talking about personnel versus personnel. I do think the Cowboys secondary is pretty decent. You know, I think they have actually a good tandem at safety as far as pass coverage. But Brian, your thoughts on the Giants wide receivers? If you have any additional thoughts on the linebackers for Big Blue, please fire away, and we'll go back to Carl and so on and so forth.
All right, just a quick thing on the linebackers then. The talk of Blake Martinez and Kyler Fackrell and, you know, having not performed as well last year as in 2019 as they did in 2018. Patrick Graham was a linebacker coach in 2018, and he got quite a bit out of both of those two players. And when he left, there was, you know, definitely a slack off. Like I said, you know, Blake Martinez played almost 99% of the snaps last year, but he was more of a cleanup guy. But I think as far as fixing the linebackers go, they're trying to do it, but they're trying to do a little bit on the fly. Lorenzo Carter is the only linebacker on the team that was on the team 2 years ago. Ryan Conley was a rookie last year. David Mayo was brought over as a free agent. Everybody else is new. So we got to see what happens there. They've made a shot, kind of like they used to do with the offensive line, you know, do mid-round draft picks in you know, 1 and 2 year signings on linebackers. So we have to see what happens there. But on to wide receivers, I think first thing you have to take into account is Jason Garrett is now the offensive coordinator. So you're going to see a lot of two tight end sets, a lot of, you know, 12 tight personnel. Well, then who comes off the field? Well, you know, one of the wide receivers. You're only going to have two wide receivers out there. So you, rather than have a, you know, quite often, rather than have a rotation of, you know,
four wide receivers for three positions. You're going to have three for two or four for two. Golden Tate is, you know, as good of a possession receiver as there is, and he's a very good yards after catch man. And he's a strong guy. I know he's 30, I think he's 32 now, but you know, he's pretty much indestructible. Sterling Shepard, on the other hand, we have the concussion issues, but he's a very, very good possession, you know, slot type receiver if he can stay healthy. And Darius Slayton, I don't think anybody saw that coming out of him. I mean, he was one of the best rookie wide receivers last year, and I was very impressed with him, and especially his hard work. Remember, the question on him coming out of college was, you know, dropping the ball, and then, you know, the first mini camps he started dropping. Well, you know what? The kid worked very hard to fix that, and he did, and he's also a very, very strong guy. I know he's listed at 190. Well, you know what? You're looking at him. He's chiseled out of granite. He's a strong, tough, hardworking kid. So I think if you take that, those three players as healthy, like, you know, we mentioned, you know, Shepard with the concussions, you know, that's a pretty good three wide receiver rotation. But it drops off, you know, after that. You know, Corey Coleman got hurt last year. Don't know what we got there. Cody Core is, you know, especially team player. And then the only other one I could see him possibly being able to contribute is Benjamin Victor, the undrafted free agent from Ohio State. Unbelievable wingspan on this guy. He's like a condor, but he's also kind of a string bean type. So he's probably more of a developmental project. Other than that, you know, I don't see a lot on the roster. So probably the 1, 2, 3, and possibly 4. You know, we've got good players after that. You know, it's 8 ball in the side pocket as far as talent level goes for anybody who's available.
Okay, okay. Brian, got a question for Carl on the linebackers or the wide receivers as we get transitioning to wide receivers, or do you get it?
Well, let's ask Carl what he thinks of Golden Tate and his future with the Giants. I know he's 32.
All right, Carl, your thoughts.
You know, Tate, you know, how should I put this? Is he a good player? Yes, but good's about it. I mean, the guy has been bouncing around a number of teams now for the last couple of years. You know, guys that are that good don't keep bouncing around teams from Seattle to Detroit to Philadelphia, now us, in the span of about 5 years. That is troubling for a guy who's you know, talented when he's on the field and makes some plays. But is he, to me, I don't think he's any better than what, a number three receiver. That's how I would characterize him. Number two would be very, very spotty, and definitely not a number one receiver by any stretch. Shepard, and I think this is an issue that I think we talked about last year. It appears as if Shepard and Tate are basically identical receivers when they're on the field, in terms of neither of them create deep separation on you know, on opposing defense, meaning that they can't, they don't go deep. Essentially, that's basically what I'm saying. That they're not guys that can take the top off a defense. And so basically, their production is sort of confined to a specific area of the field. When you have two guys like that, it you know, I don't want to say cancel each other out, but the way I envision offense, I don't like having that. I need to have kind of like three guys: a guy that can stretch the field, a guy that can take between a 15 and 20 yard area of the field, and then a guy that creates separation and I can have as an underneath player. That's how I always vision, you know, receivers on offense, not having two guys that do essentially the exact same thing. Now in terms of this year, now it was mentioned about Garrett just now. Well, Garrett in his career as coordinators, he had an ex receiver on his roster almost of all times, from Terrell Owens to Dez Bryant to Amari Cooper. And so when I think about that and say, okay, well, how does he now create offense without having one of those particular players on his team? And the basic answer I can only give is that there is an expectation, I believe, that Darius Slayton is going to grow into that particular player this season. Does he have the attributes to do it? He's got a chance. And one can only hope. You know, I know He had a couple of, you know, the game against the Jets sort of stood out last year. I'm looking at back at his game log now, and he had that game against the Eagles when Eli came back and had that start, the game that they lost in overtime. And then the last three games of the season, he only caught six passes. Like, for as good of a season as he had, quote unquote, the last three games of the season, it was, you know, he was almost invisible. And so it's like, wait a second now, you know, for a team that, you know, you would, you know, we're hoping for bigger things. What would be a reasonable level of expectation for Darius Slayton this season? Like, what if I were to pose that as a question to everybody and say, okay, if we are expecting this particular young player to emerge as the Giants' best receiver, whatever, however you want to define that, what, in terms of statistical output, what constitutes a very good season for him? Are we only talking touchdowns only? Are we talking about a high reception output and yardage? Are we talking about a guy that goes for 85 catches and 1,300 yards? Like, I think that for any really, you know, I would say just high-quality receiver. I won't even say a top-level receiver, but just a high-quality receiver. I feel like that is just a minimum baseline for performance. So going into this season, do we have the speed with those receivers to create separation and keep defensive teams up at night? Right now we do not. So from that standpoint, it's almost as if we're going to sort of be an offense out of the receivers that is sort of like a workman-like team. And I'm not totally sure I'm comfortable with that. And so from that, I'm hoping for the best. But given the factors and the variations in play, including the injuries that we talked about with Sterling Shepard, I'm almost sort of like, if I put the over-under on games played at Shepard at 10.5, I'm not totally sure if I'm going to take the over on that. So that's how I look at it.
Are you asking about projections for Darius Slayton? Because we can go back to Brian and on that.
Well, yeah, let's put it to everybody. If we believe that mm-hmm. Darius Slayton is going to emerge as a top receiver for this team, what constitutes a very good season for that particular player in terms of statistical output?
Hey, Brian, can you answer that real quick, and then we'll go to Worm after that.
Sure. Well, it depends upon how much playing time he gets. You know, he may get injured, so that could, you know, throw the train off the rails. But last year he had 48 receptions. He had 8 touchdowns. He had 740 yards. I see no reason for him to not up the receptions into the 65, you know, range, and maybe a thousand yards reception. I don't see a lot more than that because I don't think the offense is going to feature a wideout that greatly. So I would figure, yeah, probably about 65 receptions to a thousand yards. And then, you know, he had 8 touchdowns last year. Touchdowns are, you know, they're epi. They can go up and down quickly. But as far as receptions go, let's say 65 and 1,000 yards.
I'm with you on that 65 range. I'll speak on it when it's my turn, but let's go to Worm. Worm, real quick, can you answer that question from Carl? And we'll go back to Carl for any additional thoughts on the wide receivers. But Worm, real quick on Darius Slayton, any projections out of Darius Slayton, and then we'll go back to Carl.
I mean, you know, following Garrett when he was in Dallas, he leaned heavy on the run game and on the tight ends. I know he always liked having, you know, big target receiver, you know, like he had with Dez, but he doesn't really have that here. Slayton, I would probably say somewhere around 55 to 65 catches, maybe 870 to 930 air. Only because I just think Garrett's going to rely heavily on Barkley to run a rock. I mean, but I do love Slayton. I don't think he's at the top of 1,000 yards. If he does, I would love to see it.
Okay. Let me say this, and then we're going to go back to Carl and get any additional thoughts. I'll say this. I'm with you guys on the 65 catch range. I also look at it also that Slayton, he probably would have had more if had it not been for the lack of production from Benny Fowler and Cody Latimer. Let's not forget about those bums, all right? Those guys are taking
DJ Jones early
on. So if you really look at it from that aspect, and also remember, I mean, I'm not, when I say remember, I'm, you know, I'm saying as far as a, you know, form of expression, but you guys know Daniel Jones and Slayton, they're tossing balls with each other all season. So they had a chemistry, you know? So it's not like it was new to them. There was no game tape on them. So it worked out. Like, those guys were on the same accord when they were drafted as rookies. Carl, anything else on the wide receivers you would like to add? I mean, I know this doesn't count, Carl, and I was going to say this when I was going to speak, but you think Jason Garrett, and this is – I know this is pure wide receivers, but this kind of has to be discussed. And Worm kind of touched on it a little about run the route, but we have got to see more snaps out of Barkley split out on the Marshall Faulk role, because why not? God produces. He has the best yards after the catch on the team, and he's the running back. But that's not a good thing if your running back has the best yak across the board versus wide receivers on the own team. I mean, you could look at it twofold, but Carl, your thoughts on any additional thoughts on the wide receivers?
Well, you know, that's what we heard when he was drafted, that he can play the role of wide receiver because he was so fast and so versatile that he could play in the slot or he can play outside and be a matchup. And for 2 years, we never actually saw that. I think if you tracked Saquon Barkley's snaps at any receiver spot on the field, it probably was less than like 7%. it was almost non-existent. Now, right. Does that change this season? One would hope so. But the smart money would bet that that doesn't happen.
All right. Worm, your thoughts on the wide receivers, Tate, Slayton, Shepard, Cody Core, and Coleman. Anything else you'd like to add, Worm?
I mean, you know, Tate, you know, he's just been, you know, he's bounced around a lot, you know, he's like an Ikilia Joe Jaravicious, you know, he's like a two or a three. Shepard, he's a walking concussion. The dude will probably get a concussion tying his fucking cleats. I think he's one concussion away from his career being over. I do like him. He has a great attitude. He's got skills when he's healthy, but again, it's when he's healthy. I mean, it's like watching Jacoby Ellsbury. I love Benjamin Victor out of Ohio State. If they can polish his game up and if he can get some PT, I think he's going to be very special for us. But I mean, what they have, okay receivers. Slayton, I think it's going to emerge, but I think the heavy lifting is going to be on Barkley. Benny Fowler, he's all right. Nothing special. They're lacking that, you know, that brand name, that big play guy. They just, you know, I don't really see it yet. Slayton, let's see how he does in year two now that, you know, opposing defensive coordinators have game film on him. But I did like that he was working with DJ over the, you know, off season, running routes and stuff.
I mean, you mentioned Victor. But what about his game that you like coming out of college with Ohio State? What's your thoughts on that?
Who, Benjamin Victor?
Yeah.
I like his route running. He's not the quickest, but, you know, his routes looked like they were pretty, you know, crisp when he was, you know, with Ohio State. He can make players miss. He's got great hips, quick feet. He's got to clean up his hands a little bit. But he's going to be a stud. If he's used correctly, he's going to be that big bodied receiver that's going to be a stud for them. The other one that's an interesting, signing was the kid that they got from British Columbia. They're 6'7", I guess, you know, you can call him receiver, tight end, whatever. I can't think of his name at the moment, but that's like a typical
almost, you know, Bill Belichick signing. You know, you take an unnamed player who doesn't really have, you know, established, and then, you know, you mold them and coach them into, you know, someone's going to fit your scheme, your philosophy, whatever you want to call it. That's going to be an interesting, you know, person to watch in the skills position, you know, as training camp opens up, you know, just to see exactly what he has and how he matches up against NFL talent. Because that could be, you know, if he's legitimate, you know, and can play, that's a 6'7" receiver. That's a big target to have inside the 20 and inside the 5 where you can just, you know, throw jump balls to the back pylon. That's a valuable target if the kid can play. Basically it.
You have any additional questions on the linebackers and the wide receivers to Brian and Carl and myself? Or
no, not that I can think of.
Okay. All right, we'll go back around and get some final thoughts. But let me say this on the wide receivers, man. I can't ignore that fact, and I said that to Carl about Barkley. You know, about, you know, 7% of the snaps. Now, there's nothing wrong if Jason Garrett is going to run him in motion, line him up, you know, in the slot. Because the wide receivers, to me, I look at them, and you guys kind of hit on it. I don't – if I'm an opposing defense, I don't necessarily fear them. Let's hopefully they'll get through this this period. They don't get through, you know, like kind of with Golden Tate last year, and he had the 4-game suspension, and the appeal was not overturned. I think that kind of set the offense in the first 4 games when they played Dallas, Buffalo, Tampa Bay. The first 4 games of the year, I think Minnesota was in that group as well. No, the Redskins game, but we ended up winning that game. But when this core, you know, a guy like you said, Worm. I mean, if Shepard is for the wrong turn, and he hasn't really been that guy to get 80, 90 catches. Like, he's kind of been pedestrian. He's been hurt. He's been kind of in the intermediate. He's not a burner. Like, you know, he had a good, you know, in college when he was in Oklahoma, man, he was a home run hitter. But then here, in, you know, at the pros, man, it has not translated as much as I thought it would. But Golden Tate, as far as being a possession receiver, like Carl said, on most teams, he'll probably be a 3 on a very good team, of course. A wide receiver, he'd probably be a 3-2 at the highest. I say all that to say is I would love to see Garrett get real creative with the offense. The game that really sticks out for me when it comes to utilizing the most out of your personnel was the Redskins game, the second game. Barkley, I would love – he has it in him. And we've seen Ezekiel Elliott split out and do some damage with the Cowboys. You know, man, he was more of a head coach, of course. He was playing – you know, he was in the head coach role. But – it's all about touches for me. Get these guys that you got to pick your poison or try to make opposing defenses pick your poison. And I would like to see that bump up to 12 to 15% as far as him. If he goes in motion, you have no guys in the backfield. You know, if you got to go 3 wide, if you run this 12-man personnel, you run double tight end, and maybe, you know, give defense a look. Make an audible adjustment if you see Barkley go in the slot, because we know – that a lot of these linebackers, if they miss that tackle, it's going to be hell on them. But last year's wide receivers, I mean, I can't, you know, I said it earlier, like the Lattimores, the Benny Fowler, and these are guys the Giants were, I don't know what they were thinking, but they said they were counting on them to make up for the lack of production, especially in the trade of Odell Beckham Jr. I knew that wasn't going to happen, and it, obviously it did not happen. And this is where we struggle. And then give credit to, you know, Daniel Jones even having that 24-12 season. Like, he's really doesn't have that Pro Bowl type of guy on offense at the wideout spot. And we talk about his fumbles and his cleaning up. But as far as getting the ball down the field, we've seen it in the Eagle game, the Monday night game with Darius Slayton. He's got a nice touch on the pass, but I don't think he has that guy on offense at the wide receiver position, man, to really maybe – I don't know. Jason Garrett may play this, you know, maybe a little intermediate football, maybe not stretch the field down the field, because maybe we may not have, you know, if you have Solder at right tackle and Thomas at left tackle, we may take chances. There's a lot of domino effect in all this. But anyway, Brian, take your time, man. Your final thoughts on the linebackers and the wide receivers on this episode. Take your time, man, on each either or anything else about the Giants news, GiantsFans.net, the Big Blue Huddle. Then we'll go to Carl, and then the Worm will wrap up.
Okay, well, first of all, the wide receiver, it's not really what we think about it, but what the team thinks about it. And in a wide receiver draft, which this year was, the Giants didn't draft a wide receiver at all. And you swing and miss on wide receivers. Sterling Shepard, he was taken with a 40th pick. Well, you know, he was taken with 47. That same draft was Michael Thomas. He had almost 1,800 yards reception last year in yards. So I think that the Giants think that they have a good trio starting. They're hoping that Corey Coleman can produce, and they're not looking to do that much more as far as wide receivers go. We're going to see more things from the tight end. I agree with you. Saquon Barkley might be their best wide receiver, and not to sound like a broken record, but this is Jason Garrett's offense, and the Cowboys from time to time would split out Ezekiel Elliott, especially when he was alone back in the backfield on passing downs. And I like Zeke a lot, and I think he's similar to Barkley, but I think Barkley's a lot better receiver. That was one of the hits on Zeke coming out of college, was he wasn't a very good receiver. And although he's functional at it, he's nothing special, whereas I think that the potential's there for Barkley. And, of course, what everybody always brings up with, when we talk tight ends, Evan Engram can play as a wide receiver. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but you may see him split out from time to time. So I think that Garrett will get inventive, but I think that the identity of the offense is not going to emerge until the offensive line emerges as a strength. And I think it'll take a few games, and they'll start to play better and better. I think towards the end of the year, they're going to have a pretty good offensive line. From a linebacker point of view, again, work in progress. Everybody's basically new. Blake Martinez, who was a mid-high level signing, 3-year deal. I've always liked him. I think he's a good player, and he's a very good runner of a defense, a quarterback of the defense. Whereas I thought Alec Ogletree, who I liked when the Giants signed him, I thought he laid an egg on that. He couldn't get himself in position to cover, so how the heck was he going to align the other 10 guys? And you saw it with the coverages. Well, defensive backs and linebackers turning around with their hands on their hips. What was I supposed to do? So it's a work in progress on linebackers. I think that that's, the weakest point of the defense. There are some young players, and we could see them emerge as time comes along. But, the Giants, they're going to have to take, if not baby steps, at least short steps, move up from lousy to, middle of the pack, and then, start to compete for playoff positions. So we'll see what happens. Anyways, we're the Big Blue Huddle, and you can find us at www.giantsfans.net. Then we have on Facebook at New York Giants, Big Blue Huddle, Twitter at Big Blue Huddle. And I also have the Big Hitters Corner, which is me. I do a weekly scouting report of the upcoming opponents during the season. And I do several podcasts, which I try to pump up a bit during the year. It's kind of slow point right now. That's why I'm here, because I like talking to you gentlemen. Anyways, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Big Blue Huddle, GiantsFans.net. Real quick, Brian, before we go to Carl, I know you gave us your final thoughts. So real quick, so I can write this down, man. The linebackers, when you look at, are we better or worse with our core linebackers? Are we better or worse with the wide receivers from last year to this year?
We're way better at linebacker than we were last year. I think from an inside linebacker point of view, Martinez is a big upgrade from Ogletree, who's really a 4-3 will. Ryan Conley's back. Again, we don't know what we're going to get there. And on the outside, Golden's gone, but I wasn't all that impressed with him, really. Like I said, no impactful sacks. And I think Kyler Fackel's a better player. And, of course, the younger guys, Jimenez and Carter – they got another year under their belt. So, we'll, but I think that there's, we're better than we were last year.
And what about the receivers?
And at the receivers, well, it's the same players. So, yeah, Slayton with another year under his belt. Hopefully, you know, Corey Coleman can come up with a devastating knee injury. Other than that, Cody Core, he's just a specialty teams guy. And Benjamin Victor, again, an intriguing player. We'll see if he can get himself into the mix. So I think that we're, you know, pretty much the same. You kind of tread water. But I didn't think that was a weak part of the offense anyways.
Thank you very much, sir. Brian for the Big Blue Huddle, man. Thank you, man. We go for Carl, man. Big Blue Chicago, BigBlueChicago.com. Your final thoughts. And please, by all means, sir, can you let us know with the same thing with the linebackers and the wide receivers, are we better or worse or the same in your final thoughts? And we go to Warren for the same thing. Hardcore Blue.
With the linebackers, I'm going to say a slight improvement from last year. Now, last year was bad. So we're you know, if put it this way, to Brian's point, if we can go from lousy to middle of the pack, that would be like jumping a mountain. That'd be, we would have been making some incredible progress if we can get to that. So I'm crossing my fingers that we can go from lousy to middle of the pack. As far as the receivers go, I'm going to say haven't improved. I think it's just about the same. The one thing that I would hope for would be depth. I was watching during Sunday. Yeah, it was on Sunday. I was usually every year I'll rewatch my downloaded stack of Giant games from the season, and I was watching the game against Buffalo, and that game, if I recall, had Corey Latimer, Cody Core, T.J. Jones, and Benny Fowler as the four starting wide receivers that day. It was terrible. I ran out of liquor by halftime. So that's how bad it was. So hopefully this season, that's the one thing that we probably should look at as well going into the season. And I think having this situation that has come across with the pandemic, not having these months here to sort of develop and use as teaching time and to be able to, you know, use that time for players just to learn things. The guys are going to have to kind of learn on the fly, you know, assuming camp gets started here in a couple of weeks. And I wonder, you know, because that's what I'm thinking in terms of just building up depth. You know, there's going to be less preseason games. You know, guys are going to have to kind of, once the 28th, I think, is when guys have to come in. You know, guys almost have to sort of like learn on the fly and be able to produce right away. There's not going to be much teaching time because of everything. And so I wish we would have additional depth in case, because I'm almost betting on Shepard not playing a full season. Who knows about Tate, you know, because of his age and whatnot. So you know, you want to be able to have additional guys that if the situation were to come up could actually play and not have to see, you know, Benny Fowler anymore. I mean, my stomach cannot take any more of Benny Fowler on the field anymore. So from that standpoint, you know, hopefully improvement can be made, and that's all we can hope for right now.
Big Blue Chicago, BigBlueChicago.com, man. Carl, thank you very much. Matter of fact, we'll stay right there when we get to after the worm. We've got to get two more areas for two more weeks. The worm, your final thoughts. Linebackers, wide receivers, have we improved this or not improved in each area? And your final thoughts. And thank you for the information with the season ticket holders, by the way.
You're welcome. Receivers, I guess they moved the needle in the gas tank a little bit. Linebackers, I guess they moved it a little bit more. Thank God I don't have to watch Alec Ogletree trying to cover a tight end anymore, because that was just pathetic. I'm really excited to see what Jason Garrett's going to bring with this offense. And I'm equally as excited to see Mark Colombo work with the offensive line. I think you're going to see a difference with creativity, and it's not going to be the same, you know, boring offense that like puts you to sleep or kills your buzz as you're watching the game. I go into the game drunk and I leave sober.
Oh, sorry about that.
I'm optimistic with Patrick Graham only for this reason. They traded away a good portion of his talent when he was there in Miami on the defensive side of the ball. And towards the end of the season, he had that defense humming. So I want to see if he can bring, you know, what he did the back half of the season in Miami, if he can bring that here and, you know, really come in with a great game plan week in and week out and just get the most that he possibly can out of that defensive unit and especially the linebackers, because our linebackers need to learn, you know, how to, you know, cover tight ends from up on a scrimmage. And our defensive backs need to stop practicing social distancing with the maybe move a little bit.
They were ahead of the curve, Worm. They were ahead of the curve.
That's basically it. You know, just I hope everybody's, you know, safe and their families are safe with this thing that's floating around that's making people sick. You know, just be safe, everybody. Protect yourselves. That's it.
All right. Real quick, man. That's in 2 weeks. We'll be back in 2 weeks. What side of the ball would you like to tackle in 2 weeks? If you pick defense or the offense, I'll let you know what's available.
Let's set up the offense, maybe.
Okay, now on the offense, we haven't touched quarterbacks, we haven't touched running backs, and we have not touched tight ends. Pick one of those.
Let's go quarterbacks. Let's make it a little interesting.
Okay, we go quarterbacks. Carl, on the defense, I think you picked defense. No, Lit picked defense last week. So on the defense, we have not got to the safeties or the cornerbacks. Which one would you like to in 2 weeks?
Oh, damn, I should have taken a quarter out of my pocket. let's go cornerbacks.
Cornerbacks.
So,
okay.
So hopefully before training camp, we will get to talk special teams because Mr. Rosas, I need to have a few minutes to vent on this one.
No, shoot, we got time now. What do you want to say? And we can address it in the future, but what's up with Ross?
Okay. Are we to believe now, like this is what I've heard now for the last couple of months since the season was over, that all of 2019 was simply just a bad year and not simply a revert to his very first year when he was really, really bad? Like, I feel like people are making now excuses for his being bad.
Brian, are you still with us? What's your thoughts on Rojas and then we'll go to Worm and then we'll go
back. Yeah, I think this last year the wheels fell off everything. But, yeah, Rojas, kickers can go up and down. You know, it's most kickers have pretty similar levels of talent. And so, you know, confidence, especially for place kickers, is an important thing. And he may have he had a stint there, I think, where he lost confidence in his ability. But I think in the long run, he'll be fine. There should never be a kickoff return against the Giants. This guy he kicks the ball into the stands. You know, so but we'll see what happens. You know, the specialty teams are well coached, but I hopefully he gets the confidence back. If not, you move on. The kickers are a dime a dozen.
Hey, Warren, real quick, your thoughts on Rojas?
I think maybe he should hire himself a personal Uber driver to, you know, take him places.
Yeah, absolutely on that.
He was swerving just like those kicks.
Yeah, where to start?
Lucky he missed.
Don't drink and drive, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's got a great foot, a great leg. And I love our special teams coordinator and Tracy McGrady. So I think it's just working through maybe some mental issues. The guy's talented. He really is. It's just I'm confident with him there as the kicker. I have no problem on the team. But, you know, take care of your legal issues and then get your heads, you know, screwed on straight for game day. He has a strong enough leg. He should be putting every kickoff through the back of the end zone. There really shouldn't be many kick returns against the Giants. He has a great foot. He should be getting a lot of touchbacks. Just work some technique and work through whatever mental issues are going on, because there's times where, you know, he would nail like a 45-plus yard field goal, and then he'd miss something that was, you know, maybe 20-some yards away.
Right.
You know, just consistency and, you know, maybe it's a lack of focus or lack of confidence, but just get your head on straight.
Right, right. And we'll definitely discuss that in the weeks to come as well. Maybe we'll touch upon it in a couple of weeks when we get to the corners, the cornerbacks, and the quarterbacks. This will conclude this episode. Shout out to Brian, of course, Carl, Definition of Lit, Warren, myself. My final thoughts, man, you know, with the linebackers and my evaluation, I think we're slightly better, and I think we'll even – That'll even be a little bolder if Golden comes back. I like Golden. I'm not as hard on Golden as everybody else, but I understand the impact of his production. It wasn't, you know, game changing, but it's better to have him than not to have him. So I will definitely welcome back if no other teams pick him up in 20 days from this episode. So yeah, we'll see about that. So I think the linebackers were slightly better. The wide receivers, honestly, at best, we're the same, and it could turn it could be even worse. I don't like our core, and I know we've had the discussions with Victor as far as from Ohio State. Justin Fields throwing him the ball versus those punk Big Ten teams is totally different than the NFL big boy. So maybe it'll be a surprise to us as far as production, but we shall see. I'm not optimistic on Sterling Shepard's health condition more so than his productivity. And then Golden Tate, I think just last year, it kind of dropped the ball as far as being that reliable possession receiver. Hopefully he could definitely make up for that. But wide receivers, at best, the same. And then Corey Coleman coming off the ACL injury, he was going to be more of a special teams guy anyway. I mean, he bounced around, went from Cleveland to Buffalo, ended up with the Giants, didn't get really opportunity because of his injury. But we shall see. But in 2 weeks, we'll discuss quarterbacks and the defensive backs. iTunes Podcast for Public Tune and Stitcher, Google Podcast. For Brian, for Carl, Definition of Lit, and of course the Worm. Sangre Azul, ladies and gentlemen. Lee Blue.
Can you dig it?
Watch the hand.
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Bleep bloop, 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 bleep bloop.